Have you checked out the Another World Audiobooks merchandise store? If not, you should. There are some really cool, awesome custom designs that are hand-drawn by yours truly. I think they're pretty cool anyway. I hope that you would agree, but you will never know if I'm actually telling the truth unless you go check them out. So go check it out, anotherworldaudiobooks.com. Just click on the Get Merch section. And yeah, if you want to check one of those out and buy one maybe, that would go to support the show and would just mean the world to me. Really cool to know that something you put out in the world is living in the wild, so to speak. So yeah, let me know, check it out. There's the Another World Audiobooks logo on a few of them, so you want to show your support for the podcast, or just there's a Just the Wolf one as well if you like that design and stuff, and a bunch of other ones too. So check them out, anotherworldaudiobooks.com. Thanks guys for tuning in today, and let's get right into it. Without further ado, I give you the next chapter of The Warlord of Mars. Chapter 7. New Allies. Surrounded by guardsmen, I march back along the corridors of the Palace of Kulon Tith, Jeddak of Kaol, to the great audience chamber in the center of the massive structure. As I enter the brilliantly lighted apartment, filled with the nobles of Kaol and the officers of the visiting Jeddak, all eyes were turned upon me. Upon the great dais at the end of the chamber stood three thrones, upon which sat Kulon Tith and his two guests, Matai Shang and the visiting Jeddak. Up the broad center aisle we marched beneath deadly silence, and at the foot of the thrones we halted. "Prepare thy charge," said Kulon Tith, turning to one who stood among the nobles at his right, and then Thurid, the Black Dator of the Firstborn, stepped forward and faced me. "Most noble Jeddak," he said, addressing Kulon Tith. "From the first, I suspected this stranger within thy palace. Your description of his fiendish prowess tallied with that of the arch-enemy of truth upon Barsoom. But that there might be no mistake, I dispatched a priest of your own holy cult to make the test that should pierce his disguise and reveal the truth. Behold the result." And Thurid pointed a rigid finger at my forehead. All eyes followed the direction of that accusing digit. I alone seemed at a loss to guess what fatal sign rested upon my brow. The officer beside me guessed my perplexity, and as the brows of Kulon Tith darkened in a menacing scowl as his eyes rested upon me, the noble drew a small mirror from his pocket pouch and held it before my face. One glance at the reflection it gave back to me was sufficient. From my forehead, the hand of the sneaking Thern had reached out through the concealing darkness of my bedchamber and wiped away a patch of the disguising red pigment as broad as my palm. Beneath showed the tan texture of my own white skin. For a moment, Thurid ceased speaking to enhance, I suspect, the dramatic effect of his disclosure. Then he resumed.
"Hear, O Kulon Tith," he cried, "is he who has desecrated the temples of the gods of Mars, who has violated the persons of the Holy Therns themselves, and turned a world against its age-old religion. Before you, in your power, Jeddak of Kaol, defender of the Holies, stands John Carter, Prince of Helium."
Kulon Tith looked toward Matai Shang as though for corroboration of these charges. The Holy Thern nodded his head.
"It is indeed the arch-blasphemer," he said. "Even now, he has followed me to the very heart of thy palace, Kulon Tith, for the sole purpose of assassinating me. He..."
"He lies," I cried. "Kulon Tith, listen that you may know the truth. Listen while I tell you why John Carter has followed Matai Shang to the heart of thy palace. Listen to me as well as to them, and then judge if my acts be not more in accord with true Barsoomian chivalry and honor than those of these revengeful devotees of the spurious creeds from whose cruel bonds I have freed your planet."
"Silence!"
roared the Jeddak, leaping to his feet and laying his hand upon the hilt of his sword.
"Silence, blasphemer! Kulon Tith need not permit the air of his audience chamber to be defiled by the heresies that issue from your polluted throat to judge you. You stand already self-condemned. It but remains to determine the manner of your death. Even the service that you rendered the arms of Kaol shall avail you not. It was but a base subterfuge whereby you might win your way into my favor and reach the side of this holy man whose life you craved. To the pits with him!"
he concluded, addressing the officer of my guard. Here was a pretty pass indeed. What chance had I against a whole nation? What hope for me of mercy at the hands of the fanatical Kulon Tith, with such advisers as Matar Shang and Thurid. The black grinned malevolently in my face.
You shall not escape this time, Earthman, he taunted.
The guards closed toward me. A red haze blurred my vision. The fighting blood of my Virginian sires coursed hot through my veins. The lust of battle and all its mad fury was upon me. With a leap, I was beside Thurid, and ere the devilish smirk had faded from his handsome face, I caught him full upon the mouth with my clenched fist. And as the good old American blow landed, the Black Dator shot back a dozen feet, to crumple in a heap at the foot of Kulon Tith's throne, spitting blood and teeth from his hurt mouth. Then I drew my sword and swung round, on guard, to face a nation. In an instant the guardsmen were upon me, but before a blow had been struck, a mighty voice rose above the din of shouting warriors, and a giant figure leaped from the dais beside Kulon Tith, and with drawn longsword threw himself between me and my adversaries. It was the visiting Jeddak.
Hold! He cried. If you value my friendship, Kulon Tith, and the age-old peace that has existed between our peoples, call off your swordsmen. For whenever or against whomsoever fights John Carter, Prince of Helium, there beside him, and to the death, fights Thuvon Din, Jeddak of Tharth.
The shouting ceased, and the menacing points were lowered as a thousand eyes turned first toward Thuvon Din in surprise, and then toward Kulon Tith in question. At first, the Jeddak of Kaol went white in rage, but before he spoke he had mastered himself, so that his tone was calm and even as befitted intercourse between two great Jeddaks.
Thuvon Din, he said slowly, must have great provocation thus to desecrate the ancient customs which inspire the deportment of a guest within the palace of his host. Lest I, too, should forget myself, as has my royal friend, I should prefer to remain silent until the Jeddak of Tharth has won from me applause for his action by relating the causes which provoked it.
I could see that the Jeddak of Tharth was of half a mind to throw his medal in Kulon Tith's face, but he controlled himself even as well as had his host.
None knows better than Thuvon Din, he said. The laws which govern the acts of men in the domains of their neighbors. But Thuvon Din owes allegiance to a higher law than these, the law of gratitude. Nor to any man upon Barsoom does he owe a greater debt of gratitude than to John Carter, Prince of Helium. Years ago, Kulon Tith, he continued, upon the occasion of your last visit to me, you were greatly taken with the charms and grace of my only daughter, Thuvia. You saw how I adored her, and later you learned that, inspired by some unfathomable whim, she had taken the last long voluntary pilgrimage upon the cold bosom of the mysterious Iss, leaving me desolate. Some months ago I first heard of the expedition which John Carter had led against Issus and the Holy Therns. Faint rumours of the atrocities reported to have been committed by the Therns upon those who for countless ages have floated down the mighty Iss came to my ears. I heard that thousands of prisoners had been released, few of whom dared to return to their own countries, owing to the mandate of terrible death which rests against all who return from the Valley Dor. For a time I could not believe the heresies which I heard, and I prayed that my daughter Thuvia might have died before she ever committed the sacrilege of returning to the outer world. But then my father's love asserted itself, and I vowed that I would prefer eternal damnation to further separation from her if she could be found. So I sent emissaries to Helium and to the court of Zodar, Jeddak of the Firstborn, and to him who now rules those of the Thern nation that have renounced their religion. And from each and all I heard the same story of unspeakable cruelties and atrocities perpetrated upon the poor defenceless victims of their religion by the Holy Therns. Many there were who had seen or known my daughter, and from Therns who had been close to Matai Shang I learned of the indignities that he had personally heaped upon her, and I was glad when I came here to find that Matai Shang was also your guest, for I should have sought him out had it taken a lifetime. More, too, I heard, and that of the chivalrous kindness that John Carter had accorded my daughter. They told me how he fought for her and rescued her, and how he spurned escape from the savage war-hoons of the south,
sending her to safety upon his own thought, and remaining upon foot to meet the Green Warriors. Can you wonder, Kulon Tith, that I am willing to jeopardize my life, the peace of my nation, or even your friendship, which I prize more than aught else, to champion the Prince of Helium?
For a moment, Kulon Tith was silent. I could see by the expression of his face that he was sore perplexed. Then he spoke.
Thuvon Din,
he said, and his tone was friendly, though sad.
Who am I to judge my fellow man? In my eyes, the Father of Therns is still holy, and the religion which he teaches the only true religion. But were I faced by the same problem that has vexed you, I doubt not that I should feel and act precisely as you have. In so far as the Prince of Helium is concerned, I may act, but between you and Matai Shang, my only office can be one of conciliation. The Prince of Helium shall be escorted in safety to the boundary of my domain ere the sun has set again, where he shall be free to go whither he will, but, upon pain of death, must he never again enter the land of Kaol. If there be a quarrel between you and the Father of Therns, I need not ask that the settlement be deferred until both have passed beyond the limits of my power. Are you satisfied, Thuvon Din?
The Jeddak of Tharth nodded his head, but the ugly scowl that he bent upon Matai Shang harbored ill for that pasty-faced godling.
The Prince of Helium is far from satisfied, I cried, breaking rudely in upon the beginnings of peace, for I had no stomach for peace at the price that had been named. I have escaped death in a dozen forms to follow Matai Shang and overtake him, and I do not intend to be led like a decrepit thoat to the slaughter for the goal that I have won by the prowess of my sword arm and the might of my muscles. Nor will Thuvon Din, Jeddak of Tharth, be satisfied when he has heard me through. Do you know why I have followed Matai Shang and Thurid, the Black Dator, from the forests of the Valley Dor, across half a world through almost insurmountable difficulties? Think you that John Carter, Prince of Helium, would stoop to assassination? Can Kulon Tith be such a fool as to believe that lie whispered in his ear by the Holy Thurn or Dator Thurid? I do not follow Matai Shang to kill him, though the god of mine own planet knows that my hands itch to be at his throat. I follow him, Thuvon Din, because with him are two prisoners, my wife, Dejar Thoris, Princess of Helium, and your daughter, Thuvia of Tharth. Now, think you that I shall permit myself to be led beyond the walls of Kaol, unless the mother of my son accompanies me, and thy daughter be restored?
Thuvon Din turned upon Kulon Tith. Rage flamed in his keen eyes, but by the masterfulness of his self-control, he kept his tones level as he spoke.
Knew you this thing, Kulon Tith?
He asked.
Knew you that my daughter lay a prisoner in your palace?
He could not know it,
interrupted Matai Shang, white with what I am sure was more fear than rage.
He could not know it, for it is a lie.
I would have had his life for that upon the spot, but even as I sprang toward him, Thuvon Din laid a heavy hand upon my shoulder.
Wait,
he said to me, and then to Kulon Tith.
It is not a lie. This much I have learned of the Prince of Helium. He does not lie. Answer me, Kulon Tith. I have asked you a question.
Three women came with the Father of Therns,
replied Kulon Tith.
Fedor, his daughter, and two who were reported to be her slaves. If these be Thuvia of Tharth and Dejar Thoris of Helium, I did not know it. I have seen neither, but if they be, then they shall be returned to you on the morrow.
As he spoke, he looked straight at Matai Shang, not as a devotee should look at a high priest, but as a ruler of men looks at one to whom he issues a command. It must have been plain to the Father of Therns, as it was to me, that the recent disclosures of his true character had done much already to weaken the faith of Kulon Tith, and that it would require but little more to turn the powerful Jeddak into an avowed enemy. But so strong are the seeds of superstition that even the great Kaolian still hesitated to cut the final strand that bound him to his ancient religion. Matai Shang was wise enough to seem to accept the mandate of his follower, and promised to bring the two slave women to the audience chamber on the morrow.
It is almost morning now,
he said.
and I should dislike to break in upon the slumber of my daughter, or I would have them fetched at once, that you might see that the Prince of Helium is mistaken."
And he emphasized the last word in an effort to affront me so subtly that I could not take open offense. I was about to object to any delay, and demand that the Princess of Helium be brought to me forthwith, when Thuvan Din made such insistence seem unnecessary.
"I should like to see my daughter at once," he said. "But if Kulong Tith will give me his assurance that none will be permitted to leave the palace this night, and that no harm shall befall either Dejar Thoris or Thuvia of Tharth between now and the moment they are brought into our presence in this chamber at daylight, I shall not insist."
"None shall leave the palace tonight," replied the Jeddak of Kaol.
"And Matai Shang will give us assurance that no harm will come to the two women?"
The Thern assented with a nod. A few moments later, Kulon Tith indicated that the audience was at an end, and at Thuvan Din's invitation, I accompanied the Jeddak of Tharth to his own apartment, where we sat until daylight, while he listened to the account of my experiences upon his planet, and to all that had befallen his daughter during the time that we had been together. I found the father of Thuvia a man after my own heart, and that night saw the beginning of a friendship which has grown until it is second only to that which obtains between Tars Tarkas, the Green Jeddak of Thark, and myself. The first burst of Mars' sudden dawn brought messengers from Kulon Tith, summoning us to the audience chamber, where Thuvan Din was to receive his daughter after years of separation, and I was to be reunited with the glorious daughter of Helium after an almost unbroken separation of 12 years. My heart pounded within my bosom, until I looked about me in embarrassment, so sure was I that all within the room must hear. My arms ached to enfold once more the divine form of her whose eternal youth and undying beauty were but outward manifestations of a perfect soul. At last, the messenger dispatched to fetch Matai Shang returned. I craned my neck to catch the first glimpse of those who should be following, but the messenger was alone. Halting before the throne, he addressed his Jeddak in a voice that was plainly audible to all within the chamber.
"O Kulon Tith, mightiest of Jeddaks,"
he cried, after the fashion of the court,
"your messenger returns alone, for when he reached the apartments of the Father of Therns, he found them empty, as were those occupied by his suite."
Kulon Tith went white. A low groan burst from the lips of Thuvan Din, who stood next to me, not having ascended the throne which awaited him beside his host. For a moment, the silence of death reigned in the great audience chamber of Kulon Tith, Jeddak of Kaol. It was he who broke the spell. Rising from his throne, he stepped down from the dais to the side of Thuvan Din. Tears dimmed his eyes as he placed both his hands upon the shoulders of his friend.
"Oh, Thuvan Din,"
he cried,
"that this should have happened in the palace of thy best friend. With my own hands, I would have wrung the neck of Matai Shang, had I guessed what was in his foul heart. Last night, my lifelong faith was weakened. This morning, it has been shattered. But too late, too late. To wrest your daughter and the wife of this royal warrior from the clutches of these arch-fiends, you have but to command the resources of a mighty nation, for all Kaol is at your disposal. What may be done? Say the word."
"First," I suggested, "let us find those of your people who be responsible for the escape of Matai Shang and his followers. Without assistance on the part of the palace guard, this thing could not have come to pass. Seek the guilty, and from them force an explanation of the manner of their going and the direction they have taken." Before Kulon Tith could issue the commands that would initiate the investigation, a handsome young officer stepped forward and addressed his Jeddak.
"Oh, Kulon Tith, mightiest of Jeddaks," he said, "I alone be responsible for this grievous error. Last night, it was I who commanded the palace guard. I was on duty in other parts of the palace during the audience of the early morning, and knew nothing of what transpired then, so that, when the Father of Thern summoned me, and explained that it was your wish that his party be hastened from the city because of the presence here of a deadly enemy who sought the holy Hecador's life, I did only what a lifetime of training has taught me was the proper thing to do. I obeyed him, whom I believe to be the ruler of us all, mightier even than thou, mightiest of Jeddaks. Let the consequences and the punishment fall on me alone, for I alone am guilty. Those others of the palace guard who assisted in the flight did so under my instructions." Kulon Tith looked first at me, and then at Thuvon Din, as though to ask our judgment upon the man. But the error was so evidently excusable that neither of us had any mind to see the young officer suffer for a mistake that any might readily have made.
"How left they?" asked Thuvon Din. "And what direction did they take?"
"They left as they came," replied the officer, "upon their own flyer. For some reason, after they had departed, I watched the vessel's lights, which vanished finally due north."
"Where north could Metai Shang find an asylum?" asked Thuvon Din of Kulon Tith.
For some moments, the Jeddak of Kaol stood with bowed head, apparently deep in thought. Then a sudden light brightened his countenance.
"I have it!" he cried. "Only yesterday, Metai Shang let drop a hint of his destination, telling me of a race of people unlike ourselves who dwell far to the north. They, he said, had always been known to the Holy Therns, and were devout and faithful followers of the ancient cult. Among them would he find a perpetual haven of refuge, where no lying heretics might seek him out. It is there that Metai Shang has gone."
"And in all Kaol there be no flyer wherein to follow," I cried.
"Nor nearer than Tharth," replied Thuvon Din.
"Wait," I exclaimed. "Beyond the southern fringe of this great forest lies the wreck of the Thern Flyer which brought me that far upon my way. If you will loan me men to fetch it, and artificers to assist me, I can repair it in 2 days, Kulon Tith." I had been more than half suspicious of the seeming sincerity of the Kaolian Jeddak's sudden apostasy, but the alacrity with which he embraced my suggestion, and the despatch with which a force of officers and men were placed at my disposal, entirely removed the last vestige of my doubts. 2 days later, the flyer rested upon the top of the watchtower, ready to depart. Thuvon Din and Kulon Tith had offered me the entire resources of 2 nations. Millions of fighting men were at my disposal, but my flyer could hold but one other than myself and Wula. As I stepped aboard her, Thuvon Din took his place beside me. I cast a look of questioning surprise upon him. He turned to the highest of his own officers who had accompanied him to Kaol.
"To you I entrust the return of my retinue to Tharth," he said. "There my son rules ably in my absence. The Prince of Helium shall not go alone into the land of his enemies. I have spoken. Farewell."
Note to self, if your wife is ever kidnapped by a raging maniac cult leader, do not wait until the next morning to let him bring her back to you. It's just a rule of thumb. I think something that everybody should try to live by if you find yourself in that situation, which hopefully you don't, but just in case, just in case. Thanks, guys, for listening today. Hope you're enjoying the book. If you are, I'd love to hear from you. Please get in touch with me at otherworldaudiobooks.com. I'd love to chat. Or if you have any suggestions for the show, suggestions for next books, anything you want to throw my way, I would love to hear from you. Just makes it more of a conversation. If you're listening on Spotify or YouTube, it's really easy to leave comments right there. Or, if you're not, then just anotherworldaudiobooks@gmail.com, or hit me up on social media too. It's great fun to connect with the listeners there. So thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll catch you next week.